Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Chase and Josh with Factor Fantasy. That's Chase. I'm Josh, and we are here to continue on in our Season 1 coverage of the Demon Slayer here today. Last week, I took us through Episodes 7, 8, and 9. Today, Chase will be taking us through Episodes 10, 11, 12 here in Season 1 of Demon Slayer. A lot more going on. A lot of big things happening, so stay tuned. Stick along for the ride, and before I have Chase jump on into the content, I'll turn it over to him to say a few words, and then we'll get it going.
Action-packed episode today, man. Let's get it going. Let's go. Malice in the Chalice, sir. We get to see one of my favorite people today that Janelli does not like, and I'm glad he left it up to me.
Sounds good, man. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, brother. So we pick up from where Janelli left off last time, and Yahaba's head falls with his eyeball gouged out, and it's on the ground. As Tanjiro approaches his decapitated head, Yahaba uses his arm to try to cast a spell on Tanjiro. Surrounded by arrows, Tanjiro is struck backwards. Tanjiro uses his fourth form, Striking Tide, and then second form, Water Wheel, then Waterfall Basin, then Surface Slash, then Strong Ripple Thrust, and then his sixth form, Whirlpool, in an attempt to stop being struck into the air by all these attacks coming from the spell. Eventually, in midair, the arrows disappear and Yahaba has finally vanished from after Tanjiro decapitated his head. Then Tanjiro hits the ground and cracks his rib and breaks his leg. And Tanjiro begins to crawl towards Susamaru. And Yashiro nearly gets smashed by Susamaru's Tamari Ball that she's throwing at him, but Nezuko blocks the attack. Back and forth, then Nezuko, she's grown because you know she can grow and shrink. Nezuko and Susamaru kick the Tamari Balls at each other, and this was almost like a game of kickball in a way. And Tamayo then gets over to Nezuko and gives her a healing potion for demons. However, it's not going to help her strength. It just helps her recover. And Nezuko grows rapidly in power as she continues to attack. And then Tamayo steps in the way. And Tamayo attempts to stop Susamaru for a minute and says, "Do you have any idea who Kabutsuji is? He's a coward. He is in a constant state of fear. Do you know why demons can never group up? It's because he's in a constant fear. He is afraid we would attack him if we could. He manipulates demons to make them behave. Demons like you." Now, as Tamayo distracts Susamaru, she casts a spell, and Susamaru stops speaking. And Tamayo says, "You forgot. You can't say his name, can you? You triggered the curse." And Tamayo casts the magical aroma of daylight. It's a potent smell that weakens the target's brain functions, making it impossible for them to lie or keep secrets. Tamayo says, "I feel sorry for you, but farewell now." And Susamaru begins to beg for forgiveness as if she's talking to Kabutsuji, and wheels and like goes back and forth as her arms like begin to spew out of her body and all of her orifices in her mouth, and blood's pouring out from everywhere on her body, and the top arm shoves out her mouth and reaches out and folds backwards and takes both the hands and crushes her skull in. And her eyeball and piece of her twitching arm only remain on the body. And Tamayo says, "Susamaru will be dead soon because of Kabutsuji's curse. The cells he left in her body will destroy her, and she will be ripped apart from the inside. Generally speaking, a battle between demons is futile. It's pointless. The wounds they inflict on each other can't be fatal. Only sunlight or the sword of a demon slayer can kill them, except Kabutsuji. He's the only one that can destroy a demon's cells."
Yeah, and that kind of answers one of our questions we had from the first three episodes of Demon Slayer when we first started this arc. In episode 2, when Uru Kodaki was given that monologue about the Demon Slayer core and how demons can only be killed either by sunlight or by the special sword, decapitation by the special sword. And we had that debate about it a little bit of like, well, you know, there's other things that we've seen later on. And now we're at that point where we learn that Kibutsuji at the cellular level is able, because he created the majority of these demons, to kill these demons as well. So interesting stuff there.
For sure. It almost makes me think, too, of what we were talking about last week with our debate. I wonder if why demons don't group together and team up as much is because of what she was saying. Like, they try to reach Kibutsuji's rankings in the Kizuki, and he doesn't like them to group up. So maybe that's why. Just a thought on that. Do you think that might be why?
Probably. And, you know, it's more so, I don't think it's necessarily the 12 Kizuki per se. I think it's more along the lines of, if every demon that ever existed decided to team up, that would be a problem. I think he feels pretty confident in being able to handle 12 demons he created. But I think what she's mentioning there is almost like a full-blown rebellion. If the majority of demons ever created turned against him to overthrow him, that's probably what she's mentioning that he fears.
So at this point, then Yushiro tells Tanjiro not to inhale Tamayo's spell or he could die. And then Tamayo tells Tanjiro the demons were not part of the 12 Kizuki. As we were talking about last week, some think they are, some think they're not. Because the 12 Kizuki all have marks on their eyeballs. In Sesamaru, her eyeball that's gouged out on the ground with her twitching body did not, which means most likely Yahaba wasn't one either. And Tamayo takes a blood sample of Sesamaru to try to develop a cure for Nezuko to complete what she's working on. And Tamayo leaves to take care of Nezuko because she was wounded in battle, and Yashiro follows Tamayo. Tanjiro hears the spirit of Sesamaru, a little kid, say, "Play with me," as she disintegrates into nothing. And I think that's a interesting, definitely a very unique aspect of Demon Slayer, is how after these demons are killed, you almost feel like almost like a spirit to it, or like an innocence to it after they're killed. Like, they're not all exactly maybe so evil, or maybe they couldn't help what they became, that sort of thing. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, we talked about that a few weeks ago, how the grand majority of the time a demon is killed in the show, it kind of shows their backstory and who they were that led them to the events they were. And so realistically, this Susamaru character, she was probably a child who liked to play games, and that's why she became the demon with the Temari. Is that what they're called? What are those called?
The Temari,
yeah. Like, while she was playing with those Temari, she was probably just a young kid wanting to have fun at one point, and that's why as she was going, she's like, "You do want to play with me?" And then whatever events led to her being turned into a demon and all the bad things she's done since then, it all started, she was an innocent child at one point in time. And so that's a common theme, something that's a reoccurring theme as the series goes, is every time, most times, a major demon is killed, we see them and we get an idea that the demon's not all they've been and their evil actions aren't all they are. And that's why that level of empathy that Tanjiro possesses is so important, and it teaches us all a little bit of a lesson of, you know, things led to that individual being in the position they were as a demon.
And you made a good point. You'll see in this series as it progresses, the demons we see, they all carry aspects of like where they were or how they were as a human, whether it's like a weapon or some sort of distinct feature or something like that. It almost like resembles how they were in their past life in a way. So Tanjiro goes to see Yushiro and Tamayo, in the basement of the building, and Nezuko is alive and well. And Nezuko hugs Tamayo and attempts to touch Yushiro, and she sees Tamayo and Yushiro as family, despite them both being demons. So this is like a big aspect now, because, you know, it really goes to show, like, Nezuko is really looking at the true kind of soul and intentions of a person rather than just judging them for who they are. What do you think about this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to add other than what you just said. It was interesting and something that, you know, may keep in mind for the future.
Yeah, so Tamayo breaks down in tears, and there's like a flashback of a sick Yushiro speaking with Tamayo at his bedside as he agrees to become a demon in order to live, because otherwise he's going to die, and that shows his backstory and how he became a demon. And Tamayo offers to take Nezuko with her and Yushiro so that she is safer, but Nezuko reaches out to Tanjiro and wants to stay with him. And Yushiro says, "Tanjiro, your little sister, I guess she is a beauty." For before, remember, Yushiro was like, "She's ugly as sin," or whatever.
No, he just said that she's not much to look at. And then Tanjiro lost it. Like, what do you mean? You think she's ugly? Like, yeah, he went all crazy. But yeah, all he really said is that she's not much to look at.
For sure. So then Tanjiro's crow tells him to go to the southeast. And then we have my favorite person, a Zenitsu that we saw on the mountain at Final Selection, the blonde boy. He's begging a woman to marry him. He's like, "Will you marry me? Come and marry me." And he's like scared to go anywhere. And she like doesn't want to be with him at all. And is like starts to slap him. And he's like, "I don't want to die alone." He's freaking out and being scared. And Tanjiro is just dead shocked and can't believe what he's seeing as he's harassing this woman. And the episode ends. What'd you think of my man Zenitsu?
I think that is the perfect introduction for this dude's character for what we see going forward for the seasons that are currently out that you can view on either Crunchyroll or Netflix. This is the exact... you can't introduce this dude's weird... how would I say that? Lack of self-esteem and lack of dignity character that he is. This is a very reoccurring issue with Zenitsu, is him doing shit like this. So that's what I say to him so far in the introduction to him.
Zenitsu has some game, man. He's not afraid to talk to some ladies. Some people are like afraid to talk to women. He doesn't care. He just lays it out on the line, tells them how he feels. You know what I'm saying?
No.
But what are your takeaways for this episode?
My takeaways is that very similarly to when we had the Final Selection and how we hit that peak of the action, the next episode almost felt like a dip in a way, but it's more so because it's going to be a transition to the next big thing that is coming up. I do think it's important because, as you just mentioned, we get introduced to Zenitsu, and he's a very vital character, one of the main ones that we're going to follow from here on out. So we got introduced to him. We got a little backstory with Tamayo and Yushiro a little bit. And we got to see, you know, we got to see a different way that demons can be killed outside of conventional knowledge, which again is just sunlight and the Nichirin sword. So I think it was an important episode with information that you should probably keep in mind for where this is going. It wasn't my favorite episode. It wasn't super, you know, off the charts action packed, but it was informational and necessary. And we get introductions and backstories to important characters for the series as a whole.
Absolutely. Yeah, same sort of takeaways for me. I mean, I thought it was really intricate. I thought it was, because you bring up a really good point about how you talked about a couple weeks ago about Uro Kodaki and how he said you can only kill a demon by cutting off their head or sunlight, because now clearly we've seen another way with Tamayo. But yeah, I mean, it was action-packed. I thought it was crazy with Kabutsuji, because now you can see, you know, really how powerful he is. He wasn't even there. And, you know, arms exploded out of Sesamaru's mouth and every orifice of her body, really. And it was gruesome. I mean, we always say they're not afraid to show you some graphic. I mean, even the eye was gouged out. But it was an action-packed episode, but also had... It was leading the way into the journey we're about to go on, which takes us into a bigger moments here. So, yeah, so leading into episode 11, back to my boy here. So back to Zenitsu. So he continues to harass the girl in front of him to marry him so he doesn't die alone. And I brought this up to Jay Nelly earlier today. You know, Zenitsu, everyone has crows, but he happens to have like a little pigeon for his messenger bird. What do you think of that?
I think it was a sparrow, but either way, yeah, you don't really see that a whole lot. And it might speak to the way the Demon Slayer Corps views that man, Zenitsu. And, you know, you're left often wondering, how the hell did this motherfucker survive the final selection process where 20 plus others died? Like, this guy's crying on the ground, begging a girl to marry her, literally with actual tears in his eyes, screaming that he's going to die on his next mission, so he wants to get married now. Like, who is this guy, and how the hell was he admitted to the Demon Slayer Corps? That, you know, that's just some of the questions you're going to have about this dude more than once.
It makes me also think about his sparrow. I bet he, like, the two twin girls, like, ran out of crows, and they were like, oh, you're still alive? I guess you can have this one. Like, there's one we found in the trees over there. But anyways, just like you said, so Tanjiro tells him to stop harassing the girl, and Zenitsu reminds him that they know each other from Final Selection. And then Zenitsu says, don't you interfere! That girl was madly in love with me! And the girl stops and multiple times just punches him until Tanjiro pulls her off and then pulls him out of there. And then Tanjiro says, you're acting pretty pathetic right now. And Zenitsu says, it's your fault I'm not getting married right now and I'm barely alive. It's not my fault. I racked up a lot of debt. Ah! And Zenitsu is just crying all over the place. And finally, Zenitsu calms down and looks at Tanjiro, and Tanjiro and him decide they have to continue southeast. Tanjiro says, your sparrow says, you always complain, whine, and hit on girls. That pretty much explains it. And Zenitsu says, what, you can understand bird language? And as Tanjiro confirms, his crow tells him and Zenitsu to run to their destination. Tanjiro begins to pick up a scent of a demon, and Zenitsu hears the sound of children. And Tanjiro sees two terrified children and a boy and a girl out in the distance. And the boy tells that the house behind them, which is almost like this little shack sort of thing, is owned by a monster. And their brother was taken inside by it. And Tanjiro tells the children they are going to save the kids and their brother. And of course, Zenitsu's like, I'm not going in there. And Zenitsu hears the sound of a drum inside. And a boy is thrown out the top door, like off the balcony, and hits the ground bleeding and smashes into it. And the boy asks Tanjiro in his final words if he is going to die, and then passes away in Tanjiro's arms. And the drum sound echoes again from the house. And Tanjiro asks if it's the kid's brother, but they confirm it's not, and their brother is wearing an orange kimono, confirming there's more people in this house. And then Tanjiro leaves Nezuko's box to be protected by the children, despite Zenitsu still complaining about going inside, and that he's gonna die. So the children were scared of Nezuko's box and followed Tanjiro and Zenitsu inside after them. And the building begins to shake, and the drum sounds continue to echo, and then they realize the room has changed, that they've just entered inside the house. And Tanjiro finds out that the girl's name is Teruko, and the demon's feet... Is it Teruko? Is that how you say it?
I think so.
Yeah. And the demon's feet echo against the ground as he walks around, and Tanjiro picks up a scent. And Tanjiro has Zenitsu protect the girl's older brother. So they're going to split up in this house. Not something Zenitsu's a fan of, for sure. And Zenitsu tries to convince the brother to run. He's like, run outside, run away with me. We can leave right now. But the boy refuses, and they're going to go get their brother. And then the room changes again, and they lose track of the exit. So Zenitsu's forced to stay. And then a boy with a boar mask, as they're opening up the next room, jumps through the wall and is jumping from wall to wall as Zenitsu opens the door and jumps over Zenitsu. And he has these like two like katana swords with blades. And they're like, what the hell is that? So Tanjiro, back over to him, he tells Toruko to hide behind the shelves as the drum demon starts to appear. And this is this like big, massive demon with hair, and the drums are like sewn into him where he can tap the drums and bang on them. And the demon has the drums sewn into him. As he pounds them, the room changes, and then Tanjiro charges the demon, but he taps the drum and the room flips. And then Tanjiro smells an odd scent. The boar boy busts through the walls with his Nichiren double swords, and the boar boy says, hope you're ready for me, because I'm coming through. Time for you to die on the battlefield as I soar to new heights. And the episode ends. What are your takeaways for this episode, Jay Nelly?
My takeaways is you do one hell of an impression of both Zenitsu and Inosuke. So I will say that. that was pretty fucking impressive. But as the episode itself, this was one of my favorite episodes of season one. And I'm not just saying that because the drum demon was, again, very unique, and like the ability that it had was something that you just, who thinks of it? Like, hey, you know what? I'm going to have this guy have a bunch of drums sewn into him, and based on where he smacks the drum on his body, that's the way the room's going to rotate. Like, that's fucking impressive. That is such a creative idea. So I thought that was really cool that we got to see that. But, you know, we get to see a little bit more about Zenitsu's character and essentially how, I don't want to say he's a coward because he always ends up doing what he needs to do, but he complains loudly about it. He's always scared to do it. He has to almost be talked into it. This boy was not even a demon slayer, anything. He was just a sibling of one of the ones that are trapped in the house, and he's like, no, like, we're not running away, I'm going in there. So it's like how the hell, again, did this guy survive this final selection process where, you know, so many didn't? And then on the flip side, of course, we don't really get introduced to him until the episode Chase is going to go into a little bit more next, but the guy with the boar mask, you see his personality right away too. His head first, go like, headstrong. I'm just gonna attack. I'm not gonna think about shit. I'm just strong, and I'm this, like, that's it. Like, I'm attacking. Like, there's no thought that goes into anything he's doing. He's just head first, like, straight ahead. There's no real thought process behind it. There's no real intellectual strategic thinking. It's just, dude, I'm a fucking animal, and I'm going to take out anything in my way. And so we get to see a little bit about the personalities of characters who are going to become staples in this series moving forward. So I thought that this episode was really good on all fronts. But yeah, getting introduced to really two main characters that will come into play, and the fact that I thought the demon was really unique with its abilities, it was one of my favorite episodes of season one, and I really mean that. So yeah, it was that. Those are my takeaways for that one.
Yeah, it was awesome. Same thing. I mean, I really liked that I got to see more of my boy Zenitsu. He was he's I would almost have called him the love, but no, we find more out about someone else way later on that has a love power, but I thought that'd be Zenitsu's for a minute there. He was a ladies' man, at least so he thought, but then same thing, you know, you saw the drum demon, and I thought it was really cool how it correlated with the room and like how he took over that whole environment there. And yeah, now we're introduced to, like you said, Inosuke, the boar mask boy. You same thing, literally just like an animal, like it goes at it full force, but definitely doesn't think things through. So it's very interesting. These three, Tanjiro's kind of right in the middle of those three in a way. Like, I want to say, like, he's intellectual, he's calm, he thinks things through. Inosuke, like, runs and charges right into it. Zenitsu, you kind of think he's just, like, a coward and a ladies' man at the moment. But
no one thinks he's a ladies' man. You're the only one that thinks he's a ladies' man. He was sitting there crying, begging on his knees, and the girl couldn't get away from him fast enough. She's like, ew, I'm already, get out of here. So, no, he's not a ladies' man at all. He is someone who worships women, I'll say that.
Well, I guess we do actually meet a true ladies' man later on in the show, but I think he's a ladies' man. But I thought it was excellent. So on to episode 12. So the boar boy, Inosuke, falls as the room changes. And, of course, just like Jay Nelly said, like not clearly thinking through things, lands right on Taruko, and Tanjiro is pissed. He's like, get off of her, and shoves him off. And recklessly, the boar boy scolds Tanjiro, and he goes, you think I care? And the drum demon attacks, and the floor rips apart as he hits, like, one of the drums, and it's, like, claw marks across the floor, and the hardwood floors rip apart. And Tanjiro picks up another scent, and there are multiple demons in the house. And then Tanjiro puts Taruko down and sees another dead human is mauled across the room. And Tanjiro opens up the door across the hall and sees Taruko's brother in the orange kimono that they were looking for. And back over to Zenitsu, he's terrified. He's like, you know, he's on his toes, and down the hallway he's like, if I had a heart attack, you would be a murderer and I'd be dead. Do you understand me? Don't you scare me like that. It's with Taruko's brother that's behind him, just like a normal human, no training at all. He's like, you'd be a murderer. And they're going down the hallway here. And then a demon that's, like, on all fours crawling. Like, it can't walk standing up, but it has this elongated tongue, almost like a Lickitung from Pokemon. It's, like, comes out of the wall on all fours. And Zenitsu's scared to death, still screaming, running away. But the demon's, like, tongue lashes as it's following them. And it misses the boys twice as it's, like, lashing at them. And Zenitsu falls and is trying to get up as the demon continues to approach and crawl towards them. And the demon says, I'm going to scoop your brains out through your ears. And so Zenitsu just like passes out screaming because he's so scared on the ground asleep as him and this boy are backed up against the wall and can't go anywhere as this demon is crawling towards them in Zenitsu's sleeping body. And then the boy shouts, please wake up, Zenitsu. And then as the demon's tongue lashes at them both, it cuts off at the end midair, and the demon's tongue is laying on the floor, and everyone looks up and it's dead quiet, and Zenitsu is sleepwalking, standing up, and he had cut off the demon's tongue, and he unsheaths his sword, breathes in, steps forward, lightning flashes around his fingertips, and he says, thunder breathing, first form, thunder clap and flash, and lunges forward and cuts the demon's head off, clean off. Zenitsu for the win, baby. What'd you think about my boy Zenitsu?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow along with what the issue is on why he can only be effective when he's unconscious. Like, why does he have to be sleepwalking to be an effective member of the Demon Slayer Corps? Because, I mean, and you're probably going to get into it like pretty soon, or maybe, I don't know if it's this week or next week, of he doesn't even realize he's the one that did it. Like, he doesn't even know what he's doing. So it's not, it's like, it is Zenitsu, but it's not at the same time. He wakes up with no memory. Like, he almost, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he thinks the boy did it. He's like, you killed me. Oh, thank you so much for saving us. Like, you know what I mean? So I just found it really ironic that it's almost a second part of him. Almost, You know, it kind of reminds me of Yugi and Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, yeah. When he kind of goes into that next level transformation and he's not really Yugi anymore. He's kind of the ancient pharaoh and taller and, you know, kind of badass. That's kind of what this kind of reminds me of at a different scale, you know, just when he sleepwalks and turns into a badass, so to speak. So that's what I thought about that moment.
Oh, it was awesome. And just like you said, you nailed it. He wakes up and he's like, oh my God, thank you for saving my life. Thank you for saving my life. He's like, they could have killed us. The demon could have killed us. Thank you for saving our life. And then he jumps over to Inosuke and the boy was like, what just happened? Like, it's like an alternate personality of him, like a totally different person. He has no idea. So Inosuke then is jumping through the rooms of the house as he encounters this sumo wrestling standing demon, this fat, slow sumo wrestling demon. And Inosuke goes, self-taught style, beast breathing. It's going to feel so good to rip you such a huge target to shreds. And he just, Fang 3, devour. It slices both his swords through the arms, and both swords cut the head clean off with all the body parts still midair, just run straight through it like a true animal. What'd you think of that, Jay Nelly?
It's what we kind of were talking about earlier. He's a beast is the way to say it. He's just an animal, and all he knows is attack. He doesn't know defend. He doesn't know work smarter, not harder. No, dude, it's just like, that is what I gotta do. Full speed ahead, let's fucking go. Like, that's it, man.
Let's fucking go. 100%. So then the drum demon is recalling Muzan Kabutsuji stripping of his number 12 Kizuki. Remember, we were talking about the Kizuki last week. Because he has nothing left to offer. And we learned that the drum demon, his name is Kyoga, and he wishes to reclaim his rank in the 12 Kizuki. So now people are starting to tell the truth around here. Now we know that people are not part of the 12 Kizuki. And then Taruko hugs Kiyoshi, her brother that they found in the orange kimono. And Tanjiro approaches the boy and hands Kiyoshi this ointment that he has on him to treat his leg wounds. And Kiyoshi recalls being dragged into the house by Kyoga. And then the crawling demon and sumo wrestling demon and Kyoga got in this big fight that broke out that caused Kyoga to get one of his drums ripped out the back of his back that landed in the room. And they all broke out in this conflict. And then Kiyoshi picked up the drum and hit it, causing the room to change and locking him safe inside the room. And Kiyoshi and Tanjiro recall Kyoga referring to Kiyoshi a Murechi, meaning a rare type of blood, which, remember, they're looking for a blood type to try to find out more to save Nezuko. And one human Murechi is like a delicacy that can equal 100 humans to a demon. And Tanjiro tells Taruka to use the drum with Kiyoshi to change rooms to stay safe and to watch after her brother as he takes on the drum demon in the next room. So Taruka, with her brother, strikes the drum as Tanjiro leaves, and the room causes the door to disappear. Kind of reminded me of, like, the room of requirement in a way. So Kyoga enters the room, and Kyoga taps the drum on his left shoulder twice, and the room rotates, causing Tanjiro to somersault onto the ceiling. Tanjiro, upside down, feels the room turn to his right as Kyoga strikes again while he's upside down. And then a drum, he taps it, and then it flips right. And the left one, when he taps it, it flips left. And then Kyoga strikes his left drum, and the room rotates back. And Tanjiro forward spins one time and then rotates backwards again and tries to catch his ground. But Kyoga hits the drum on his belly, launching his claw attack across the room, causing, you know, the boards on the floor to break, almost like a big earthquake in a way. Then Kyoga pounds all the drums in rotation, causing the room to somersault and change, and Tanjiro is flipping back and forth around the room. Tanjiro begins to panic and stops on the ceiling and recalls Urokodaki's teachings. Urokodaki, he remembers him saying, consider the characteristics of water. Pour it into a container and it's square. Pour it into a bottle and it's round. It can smash boulders or flow as far as the eye can see. And Tanjiro remembers there are 10 water-breathing forms. Tanjiro grits his teeth and stands up despite being wounded, grips his sword, and says, "Without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, I will not yield." And the episode ends. What do you think about this episode, Jay Nelly?
Yeah, it was this one was action-packed, right? We had a whole lot of stuff going on. We saw battle components of the three main characters that we're going to follow going forward. I don't want to compare them directly to, you know, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, but on a lower scale with different abilities, you can almost make certain comparisons. You know, obviously, you have to put Nezuko in there somewhere, but at this point in time, Nezuko's still full demon, and though she seems to understand human speech, she can't ever really talk back or say words. So, you know, I do realize that Nezuko is a more key component than some of, you know, Zenitsu or Inosuke, but I'm just saying that in terms of our travel companions going forward and learning more about different techniques, right? All we really knew from Tanjiro to this point was water breathing, the 10 forms of water breathing. We haven't seen all 10 forms, but Uro Kodaki taught him 10 forms of water breathing. Now all of a sudden we see thunder breathing, and now we see beast breathing. So we are starting to be introduced to different types of attacks from people who have different abilities. And so I think it's super important, and it really goes to play on the Demon Slayer core altogether of, you know, what, how can we utilize strengths from everyone for the common goal of getting rid of these dangerous demons that pose a threat to humanity. And on top of that, the actual action itself was really interesting. When we see this drum demon nonstop throwing a beat down on his chest and on his shoulders and on his sides and on his hips, and all of a sudden, you know, the fucking room's doing the hokey pokey, and we got Tanjiro trying to turn himself around. We got like this, all this shit's going on at the same time, and then he hits himself in the center. That's when like the claw marks slash the center of the floor, and it's just really, yeah, we get to see again new abilities from even not so much just the good guys, but from the bad guys' side too. It's always something different. It's always something creative. And so, yeah, I thought it was a really good episode. It was a good continuation of the previous one, and the action didn't let down, and there's still, you know, more to come from it eventually, you know. So I was a fan. I thought this was a good overall episode. So far, there's been like two where I thought were slower, where I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm still getting good information, but, you know, maybe not my favorite. But to this point of where we're at here in season one of Demon Slayer, there's not been an episode I'm like, wow, I wish I didn't watch that. That's been pretty dumb or boring. Like, yeah, that thought hasn't occurred to me up to this point. So, you know, I do think it was a good episode. I do think it is important for the series and getting introduced to new characters, new abilities, and same thing with the demon side of stuff. We get to see new abilities on their end. And, yeah, those are the kind of takeaways I had on my side.
Yeah, I thought it was badass, man. Once again, we say this all the time. It's so unique, their abilities. I mean, the room changes with the drums as they're going after Kyoga. You saw a little bit of backstory on Kyoga with the 12 Kizuki and how he used to be a part of that, but then was stripped because he didn't live up to expectations. My boy Zenitsu showing off. He's a fucking badass. Can't stop that motherfucker. He's a ladies' man. He has
thunder breathing.
That girl wanted to marry him. He wanted to marry him. He was in love. They were in love together. and then we got to see, you know, Inosuke, just like you said, like his attacks, he's not like a pushover either. He like just ran through that sumo wrestling demon and cut him into pieces. So, and, you know, it was kind of like a maze. It kind of reminded me of what,
it's like almost like Pan's Labyrinth type shit.
Yeah.
And also too, to your point, one thing I know you talked about Inosuke's swords, the katana style, but, you know, really to kind of paint that picture, his swords were serrated in a way where it was little chunks taken out along the blade's edge. So it was almost, like I said, a serrated knife or a serrated Nichirin sword edge, which we've not seen to this point for anyone in the Demon Slayer core at all. It's very unique, and it's unique to Inosuke. Number one, that he's wielding two at the same time, but two, that they're not like a full flesh sword that's one piece of steel sharpened. it is like jagged and broken up along the blade side. So when it cuts in a serrated way, which is harder to repair for demons. I thought that was really cool too.
That was awesome. Yeah, great point. But yeah, it was just really cool. I mean, even to the point of like they found that drum and that's how they were able to stay in that room and stay protected. So yeah, it was just a really cool episode, man. What debates did you have for the day, Janelli?
So I've got two, but the first one I want to start out with, and this is somewhat we picked up having a level of conversation about this before, but specifically, I believe there's three demons in that house. How do three demons coincide in one house when each needs to have their fair share of human flesh? Like, do we believe that they're just luring people in there and it's enough to sustain three demons? How do they not attack and try to rip each other apart? How do they not decide, you know what, this is not going to work as a living situation anymore, I need to go somewhere else? Like, how did they just decide we're going to have three? And they weren't small. They were not small demons. They were one. That one guy was fucking massive. The drums is massive. The sumo guy, pretty massive. Even that weird serpentine, you know, crawling on all fours with the tongue out one was still fairly big. Like, how the hell do they sit there and split that house up amongst three demons and still have enough human flesh and blood to go around to keep them sustained and satisfied?
I don't think they did, in my opinion. And I think that's where it came into that altercation they had before. I remember Kyoga was out, outside the house is how the boy got dragged in with the orange kimono, their brother. Also, you know, that one kid was like thrown out the roof somehow, I guess because like the room changed or something. I wonder how that happened. But I bet you they probably got into an altercation because there wasn't like enough food in there and they were trying to lure people into the house, but then kept going outside the house as far as they could. But you got to think, like, demons, I guess depending on the level you are, you can, of course, like Muzan, he goes pretty much anywhere. But I imagine they would probably watch how far they would go at night because of the sunrise. But I don't know. I would say they probably ran out of food is what I would think, which is what caused that altercation before. And this goes into the fact of what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with like why they don't group up and team up. Because one, now we see Tamayo has said Muzan doesn't want them to team up and wants them to be in fear and scattered of each other. And now it seems like they just don't fucking get along because they want each other's shit is what it kind of seems like. So just my thoughts. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, let's also talk about this one aspect of that demon too. He was at one point one of the 12 Kizuki. And you saw Muzan take that rank away from him. So that leads into something separate later on of, you know, if you're not holding up your end of the bargain, whether you're upper six or lower six or whatever the fuck you want to call it, you know, you can be stripped of that rank. And so that demon probably was one of the baddest demons that we've seen to this point. But point being is that if you're living in a house with multiple demons and the other two, they were disposed of pretty quickly. And I think that it was a multi-purpose. Number one, it was able to show us what Zenitsu can do when he's in the form that is most beneficial. When he's, you know, in sleepwalking mode and he's not conscious and he's not himself, you are able to see his ability. But it took one strike and the lizard-type demon was dead. And then Inosuke, to your point, with the sumo demon, hacks him to pieces pretty quickly. Wasn't really much of a contest there. So the only one that really gave him the trouble, and still currently is giving them trouble, is the drum demon. And we already know his previous rank, or at least, I don't know where in the 12 he was, but he was at least one of the 12. So, you know, when we go and talk about how there's probably a lot of conflict in this house, I just don't know how the drum demon even allowed them to stay in there. Fucking kick their asses out. You know, what are they going to do? They can't do shit to you. Drag them by the hair and toss them out on the brick road. Tell them to go back to Kansas. I don't know, dude. But I don't see how three demons can coexist in one house. And that house is fairly small overall. So I don't know. We could say that in the nighttime it only lasts for a little bit, so you got to get back to some form of shelter, and that's all well and good. But realistically, if you want to travel by night only, you can find yourselves caves and stuff to hold up in. It's almost as if they were comfortable there and they had no problem being there. And that's almost an issue I have, is having three demons in one house and one being significantly stronger than the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think... Yeah, you would think maybe one would eat the other ones. I don't know how that works.
But yeah, that's, I don't know if that, you know, we talk about that, because that's a good question, because then we go into, if you eat another one of the demons, is that necessarily dead? Because we already learned there's only, at this point, that we know of three ways now to kill demons. The sunlight, the Nisharin swords, and Muzan's cellular blood whatever that just explodes through when you break curse, or you break the code and say his name when you're not supposed to, whatever, like, you know. So even if they ate the demon, does that really do anything?
Right. What I was wondering is, I wonder if remember what Tameo was saying. She was saying how demons fighting each other, it's basically irrelevant because they're invincible. So I wonder if they basically destroyed each other, all of them, just ripped each other apart to the point there was nothing left. And then they all regenerated and just, like, each went their separate ways because they thought each of them were dead by that point. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know exactly how that would work, which it's interesting talking about, like, eating demons and stuff, because there's much later on in this series, we see someone that eats demons. So it's very interesting how this all comes into play. But my answer would be that, I don't know. That's a very interesting question. Which Malice in the Chalice, I'm going to say this. You know, what's interesting is, like, they had a universal ride for Demon Slayer actually, it's still there. So it came out a few years ago, but it was at Universal Studios. How cool would it be to have Demon Slayer Horror Nights houses?
Oh, man, that would be, honestly, I would be okay, and this is just me. Like, please don't take this seriously or think I'm advocating for it. I'm just saying I would be personally okay if they decided to only do Demon Slayer houses for a Horror Nights run just for one season, and every single house you go into is different demons that we've seen throughout the seasons up to and including now the first few episodes of season 4. To really be able to, you know, we will have maybe, I don't know if it's been labeled yet, but, you know, the spot where all the upper six of the 12 Kizuki, maybe have that as one specific house, and the lower six of the 12 be in another house, and then the random ones throughout the way have their own. That I do think that would be really cool, and just I don't necessarily believe it would be that difficult either. Maybe the cosmetics and getting it all together, but you have an idea of what it looks like on screen already. And if you could just translate that with the money that Universal has and make the houses similar to some of the altercations we find our protagonists in with the demons along the way, and we're kind of walking through those houses and almost like that we're the protagonist and those demons are trying to stop us kind of way. I just think that would be really interesting. And I think you could have around 10 really solid houses with all the demons that we have come up with. Take two out of the way already. You know, one house for the upper six of the Kizuki, one house for the lower six of the Kizuki, and then like some of the ones that are along the way give Tanjiro, Inosuke, and Zenitsu problems. And then, you know, not too far from now, we're going to see, a family of demons that kind of, yeah, I don't want to give anything away too much. But point being, I definitely believe that there's enough demons and there's enough content through the show where you could put together a solid 10 houses, and I do believe that would be a lot of fun.
I think it would be awesome. And that's the thing. I don't want to give anything away for like where we're going in the future here. But like, think about it. You could even do like the mountain from Fujikasana. And then you have another mountain that might be coming up in the future there with a lot of really cool stuff in there. And there, you know, especially when we get into season two, there's a really cool area that's tied in. And that one, you could even partially like have pyrotechnics and like light on fire and stuff. You know, I guess this is more of a conversation we need to have when we do like our rankings at the end of all this, but damn, that would be cool, right? And imagine if like you get to, for instance, like you're walking through like one of those alleyways and you come into contact with who's supposed to be like Muzan Kabutsuji. Like that shit would be fucking intimidating.
and you give that one character the waiver, like you sign like a waiver, and like that one character is allowed to do a little bit more than what other characters are able to do. Maybe touch, like grab you or do anything crazy, but maybe touch you or like bump into you, or, like just like, do a little bit more than the scare zones and the like the scare distances. Just, you know, understanding that if you go into that area, you are open to more than just what the regular jump scares would be. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, and I think my favorite one, just like you said, I don't want to give anything away, but imagine, just like you were saying, the castle with the upper Kizuki there and going through that. And it would be very significant because when we get to this, y'all will know a lot about it, but there is like a guitar that's played. Imagine if you just heard that as you're about to walk through. That shit would be fucking intimidating, man.
Hell yeah, brother. So what are your debates for today?
Yeah, so my debate for today, where do you think, my big debate, because now we've seen Inosuke, how do you think he developed his technique? If he kind of was like left, is the boar boy, right? Like he just kind of like goes at it himself. If he developed this himself, how is there a way he could have developed all this on his own? Do you think that's a plot hole, or do you think he just like taught himself different things, like how people teach themselves to snowboard and ski? Or is just animal instinct how he kind of is an animal? Like, what do you think about this guy?
This one is a hard one because I would have to say the majority of it, in my opinion, would be instinctual. There's no one to teach him these breathing techniques because I believe before he attacked, he utilized beast breathing. And, you know, that's not something that you really ever heard of prior. You know, you've heard of other types of techniques and other types of breathings and trainings, and I don't know. I think that he had some level of a mentor at some point and maybe just developed and played on Inosuke's strengths of being someone who is very just hard-headed, straight to the point, forward running, not thinking about anything. So whoever was his mentor probably had a good idea of Inosuke's strengths and weaknesses and developed his technique, or helped him develop his technique to play on his strengths of, you know, he can take a hit hard, keep moving forward. He's not someone who's going to be easily swayed. He's like he's strong mentally. You can't get inside his head. He doesn't care that, you know, you might be whatever level of D. He always thinks that he's gonna overcome and just overpower it through just sheer will, you know. So I think it is instinctual, but also he had probably some level of a mentor that played on those strengths. I don't necessarily believe it's a trainer to where it's like a former Demon Slayer Corps official trainer such as Uro Kodaki or anyone along those lines. I think maybe just had an old guy who maybe was around during the olden days of when the Demon Slayer Corps was at its peak and prime, and maybe saw things and he's like, hey, look, this is best I got, so I'll do what I can with you. But at the end of the day, you know, that then that kind of shows in his own limitations when those things don't work. And we'll see it later on where running forward and just straight attack mode doesn't always work. You know, he ends up having some struggles.
Yeah, and I will say, I agree with you there. I don't know. I wonder if he took a lot of his breathing techniques from what maybe he saw in animals, because I guess he, like, grew up in the wilderness or whatever. So maybe, like, you know, animal instincts, which kind of goes into, like, maybe that's how it helped him develop these techniques. Because, like, for instance, Tondro, like, his sense of smell, like, you look at, like, Wolverine, like, he has, like, a sense of smell. Or just like you said, animal instincts, it kind of just has you dive into it. One thing that's interesting about his breathing technique, too, you notice it's like the only one without, like, a magical ability. Like, it's just, like, wind that's there. Like, he's just cutting the air, basically. But just like you said, like, he improvises, too. And I think that's, yeah, he definitely is a survivor. Like, he'll find a way just to cut it off. Like, there's no, oh, I got to do this. Let me take a step back and do some of my combos here for you. No, it's just straight up like it's a dog fight. Like, that's the way he looks at it. So I think maybe he got thrown into a pack of, like, wild pigs and he was like, just live with the pigs or something. I don't know, man. Just a thought. But yeah, with that, man, you want to close us out for the day, Jay Nelly?
No, I actually had one other debate, and it doesn't have to be a long one by any means, but we were introduced to two characters that we are led to believe are going to be an integral piece of the story. So I want to ask you, between Inosuke and Zenitsu, who do you think is more important to the Demon Slayer storyline?
I would say, honestly, it really is. Like, we always make comparisons to other fantasy fiction franchises, which is hard because a lot of them really can't be compared, but I think they're all one true integral part. Like, these three are the ones I think you're gonna see until the very end. Like, these three, I mean, now I'm, you know, who knows what happens with Fates, right? but these really are Harry, Ron, and Hermione Granger. Like, it's hard to say. I guess you could say, like, Nezuko's Hermione, maybe. I don't know. I guess this is our Harry, Fred, and George is what we got going on. I guess, like, Ron. Yeah, like you said, like, Zenitsu's definitely a Ron Weasley. But I think they're all an integral part because there's things that happen later on where literally without one piece of them, they don't make it to the next stop. So, like, they're all that significant. Now, there are going to be parts, you know, where they don't have each other. There's one moment, one big season I'm thinking of where we don't see parts of these people very much. But, you know, in terms of the overall series, I think they all play a very significant role because I can't really say one's more important than the other, because my opinion is at some point they're all going to wind up getting split up and are going to have to hold their own on very significant levels. Not like this small little going through a room with a drum demon, which is really impressive at this moment in time, but at some point, you know, there's only so far you can go without running into one of the big dogs. I think that's what it's going to take. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts are, if I really had to pick one that I thought was more important than the other, I would, and it sucks because I don't like the character too much, but I would probably go with Zenitsu. And the reason being is there's just so much mystery to his character, his whole subconscious, and how he becomes a very formidable warrior when he's not himself and awake. When he's asleep, there's so much hidden about him where you kind of, you see what you get with Inosuke. That's really pretty much it. There's not a whole lot of, I would say, nuances to him. There's not a whole lot of, you know, grace or secrecy or just, there's just not a whole lot more. Like I said, the best way I can put it is with Inosuke, to where I've seen so far, in Demon Slayer. He's more of a what you see is what you get character. And I'm not saying that what he does is easy, but I'm saying his durability is probably one of his greatest assets. At the end of the day, though, if you have someone just as durable, they can pretty much do the same shit Inosuke does. Where I've seen Zenitsu, at least to where we've watched up until on our end, do some shit you're just kind of like, there's more to this guy than we've seen so far. Like there, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but he's very rudimentary in his abilities of what kind of forms he knows in certain types of breathing. But he's got something down pat. Like, I'll say that. And on top of it, you got to wonder if he can access that subconscious part of him voluntarily. What else could he do? Where I believe with Inosuke, you kind of get what you get. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Zenitsu's the man, and you know you're not gonna have very many ladies around if Zenitsu's not there. You know what I mean? Yeah. But no, I will say it is very interesting because the first person you see with Zenitsu, you're like, why the fuck is this guy even here? how did this guy make it there? And you see a lot more into Zenitsu's past in the next couple weeks we'll cover, but he's definitely an alternate person. Like, if you take the person that was asleep and put him there, you're like, oh, absolutely, I can see how this guy made it here. But if you take the Zenitsu that we saw, it's a totally different person. But yeah, I think Zenitsu probably is one of those people that has a lot of trauma in the past that he's probably hiding, is what I would say, which causes him to be kind of the way he is, I guess, to the point of he does just freak out and have almost panic attacks in a way. But yeah, in the end, I would say Inosuke, and here's the thing. Zenitsu has proven that he can learn from other people. For instance, even just as what we've seen. Yes, of course, he's learned from his predecessors and forms and stuff, but even just going with what the plan is, he can listen to others. He eventually wound up going with Tanjiro and going in that room. And Inosuke, it's almost like, how do you trust the guy if he's just gonna fuck up the whole plan? Almost like Anakin going in there, I'm taking him now. Fuck, man, you just fucked us all. You go pull that against Muzan. Muzan's going to use that to his advantage, rip you in half, and then take your two swords and throw it at everybody else. That's exactly what's going to happen. So, yeah, I would say Zenitsu, because not only there's a lot of mystery to him, but at this point in time, I know at least he's willing to go with everyone else's perspective because he can be influenced, because he's so afraid of the situation. But with that, any other questions?
Nah, man, I think that will do it for the day, folks. So if this is the first time you've tuned into us, we really hope you enjoyed what you heard and you stick around. If you've been with us since the very beginning, thank you for continuously being the shields that guard the realms of fantasy. In terms of where you can find us online, we're on all the social sites. So on Instagram, we're at Official Ridiculous Patronus. On TikTok, we're at Ridiculous Patronus. We've got backup Instagram at @fact_or_fantasy. A backup TikTok at @fact_or_fantasy. We've got a Facebook fan page, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy. We're on YouTube at Ridiculous Patronus. We got a Twitter, RP Factor Fantasy, Snapchat, RP Factor Fantasy. And we do have our own website as well, ridiculouspatronus.blogspot.com. So please click like, subscribe, follow along, leave written reviews, leave star ratings, comment. All of the audience engagement really does help us out here on the show. And then in terms of where you can find the podcast itself, if you're an Apple user, you can find us on Apple Podcast. If you're an Android user, you can find us on Google Play. We're also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Acast, our host site Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, Jason, Josh, Factor Fantasy are there. But we are out for the day because this has been another ridiculous production.
Chase and Josh.
Factor Fantasy. Signing off.